to Ryersonian This Week. It's Friday, February 8th. I'm Melissa Bernardo.
And I'm Anthony Manrique.
It seems like this cold weather will never end. It is at least warmer than it was earlier this week, considering the school actually closed on Wednesday at 1 p.m., kicking everybody out because of the weather.
What did you do on that day when the school was closed?
Well, it's really funny because I actually had an interview at 1 scheduled, so I stayed inside because I thought, oh, like, we can just use our 1 card to get in the building, but the doors started to all lock, so they literally kicked everybody out because of the weather.
Wow.
How about you?
Well, I didn't even get to go outside at all during that day. I just stayed indoors the whole time.
Well, that was probably a smart idea. It was pretty bad outside, the freezing rain. Anyway, I hope we only have a few more weeks of this. Hopefully the groundhog is right and we're closer to spring than we think. I was just really surprised that the school let everybody know at around 11-ish that the school was going to close at 1 p.m. So I know you stayed home, Anthony, but for everybody who commuted, that must have sucked. Some people might have already been at school by the time they figured out their classes were canceled.
We also had another school closure. I don't know if it was the week before or was it a Monday during the week. I think it had something to do with the snowstorm where the school closed from 6 p.m. onwards.
Well, I always heard that like Ryerson's one of the only schools who never closes down ever. But I noticed even all the other schools too, like they let students know pretty late in the day. So maybe they just all decided at the same time that they were going to let people know at 11, but I don't know.
Anyways, today on the show, we're going to talk about Tuition Cuts and the Ryerson Musical Theater Company's production of Newsies. That's ahead. Stay with us. Last month, the Ford government announced sweeping changes to OSAP. At the same time, they announced tuition fees will be cut by 10% across the board, starting in the fall.
These cuts affect domestic students. Here at the Ryersonian, we've covered some of the student rallies happening around the city to protest this, but how exactly will this affect international students?
The Ryersonian audio team produced this piece to try to answer that question. Here's the story.
It makes no sense to me. I'm learning the same things. I'm using the same resources. I'm living in the same res building as a domestic student, but my tuition is 3 times. That's crazy.
There's no cap on international student fees in Ontario. It's been that way since 1996. The idea is that international students pay more for tuition since they don't pay any taxes to the province before moving here for their studies. That's why Vedika Singh pays more than 3 times as much to study professional communication at Ryerson than her peers who have called Ontario home their entire lives. For Ryerson and other universities in Canada, international students mean more revenue. Tuition fees make up about 50% of Ryerson's total revenue. The latest budget doesn't explicitly separate domestic and international student tuition. But if you do the math, there are about 1,600 undergraduate international students enrolled at Ryerson this year, paying an average of about $27,500 each. That accounts for about 15% of Ryerson's total tuition revenue.
Every faculty, the university as a whole, is looking at how to deal with the ramifications of the reduced tuition and the funding cuts. We're all dealing with it differently.
That was Charles Falzon. He's the Dean of Ryerson's Faculty of Communication and Design. Following the Ontario government's announcement that domestic tuition fees will be reduced by 10% next year, all 6 faculties at Ryerson have to cut their costs. Falzon has been tasked with reducing FCAD's budget by $5 million.
We offer opportunities to international students to come here. That revenue we're going to build on so that we minimize the effect of any structural deficit.
At the same time, Falzon says there will be a cap on FCAD's domestic student enrollment. the university's plan, as per the latest budget breakdown, is also to maintain domestic year one intake across campus while increasing the international student enrollment. Ryerson started focusing on recruiting international students 5 years ago. Enrollment rates for international undergraduate students have nearly doubled since. These students made up about 5% of Ryerson's undergraduate population last year. There are no signs that number will flatline anytime soon. Some worry that international fees are going to increase too. Canadian Federation of Students Ontario chairperson Noor Al-Adib says she's worried because the province hasn't announced an international student strategy.
In the past, when we've seen cuts to funding or operating budgets for institutions, we've seen an increase of international student fees. And I think in causation, it's not just like a simple correlation where they just happen to be that way. I do think that, you know, institutions charge international students more money to make up the loss of revenue.
On top of rent, food, textbooks, and plane tickets home to Mumbai, the price tag for Singh's education is high. But she says that's just how things are for international students. Their fees range from $25,000 to $30,000 per year. In a statement, Ryerson's registrar representative, Charmaine Hack, wrote, "International student fees will remain competitive when domestic fees are cut next year." As the university continues to find ways to make up overall losses, Ryerson will be hosting town halls for the community's input. The consultations will start next month. Hope you are all enjoying the show so far. I'm very excited about this next piece because it's about the Ryerson Theater Company's production of Disney's Newsies. And I'm just a big fan of musicals and Broadway shows in general, but Newsies holds a special place in my heart because one of the first times I went to New York, that was actually the first Broadway show I've ever seen.
Really?
Yes. Have you ever seen any Broadway shows?
No, I'm not really a musical guy myself, but yeah, I've always wondered what it's like. I mean, what is it about?
So it's basically, it's set back in the day, and the newsies, as they're called, they're like the paper boys, they're delivering all the papers, and I guess their boss decides to raise the prices of the newspapers, so then they go on strike, and it's just this whole story. There's also a little bit of love in it, so yeah, it's a really fun show. But yeah, we actually, in New York when I went, there was this lottery process, so you can like put your name in a lottery and win tickets, because I went with my family and we didn't actually have tickets, but we ended up winning the lottery and we were so close. Like, I can see the spit coming out of their mouths. That's how close we were. But anyway, it was really good.
Wow. Well, have you seen any of the Ryerson Musical Theater's performances?
No, never. So I'm pretty sure I really want to go see this one. The cool thing about this is that apparently nobody in this show is actually a theater student. They come from like different programs. One student's actually from journalism too. So,
yeah, and there's a lot of diversity in the cast in terms of the programs that the students are coming from. I think the Ryersonian's Nicole DiDonato mentioned that in her article that was published for this week.
So everyone, get your jazz hands ready. Our broadcast producer, Nicole DiDonato, gives us an inside look at the Ryerson Musical Theater Company's production of Disney's Newsies.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Ryerson Musical Theater presents Newsies the Musical. Coming soon.
This is what Sunday morning rehearsals sound like for the Ryerson Musical Theater Company. They are practicing the big tap number in their production of Disney's Newsies. The cast and crew have been preparing since the summer. Director Isabella Ferrilli says the show has a message that is relevant to students today.
It's a message that relates not only to like that time period of the 1900s, but the reason why it's so great is that it like is a message that is relevant even today with students protesting and fighting for what they believe in. It's something that goes beyond just the Disney world.
Newsies is set in New York City in 1899 and is based on a true story. The show follows orphan newsboy Jack Kelly and his friends. The newsboys go on strike after their boss raises newspaper prices at their expense. With only weeks to the show, RMTC is doing everything they can to be performance ready. Mark McKelvey, who plays the lead in the show, has been practicing day and night to perfect his New York accent.
Just kind of practicing accents. I got a vocal coach. I have two vocal coaches, one with the show and then one outside of the show, and just working a couple times a week. We rehearse for Newsies about 1 to 2 times a week, and then leading up, it'll be way more. And it's just surrounding yourself with musical theater, and it rubs off.
But preparation goes beyond accents. Colin Darling, who plays Crutchy, has been practicing walking with a limp and using a crutch. He says it's been challenging because he's never needed one before.
In the rehearsal process, they had me limping around, so I'm going to have to learn the choreography again with a crutch, which is going to be a struggle in itself. I think it went okay, but again, I had to step out of the dances a couple times, and so it's hard. It definitely is hard because my ankle hurts, my underarm is going to get bruised. It's not going to be fun, but it's worth a while.
Let's try it on the skate. Ready? 5, 6, 7, 9.
The Sunday rehearsals are only one part of the bigger picture. Varelli says there's also the production side.
We have the costume design and the set design and all of the building for that stuff that gets put together. And then on top of that, we have the executive team, which meets as well, because they're the ones who are working on the funding, who are working on the marketing, who are working on getting the show out there. So honestly, that's one portion of the whole entire thing.
The RMTC functions as a real-life theater company. While the creative team and cast are responsible for bringing the musical to life, the executive team is in charge of marketing the show and raising funds. Director of Finance Ben Cornish says their budget is $40,000. This includes expenses on the venue, costumes, props, and set.
We source from a number of different sources, specifically broken down into our different roles. Our development manager is responsible for seeking out funding direct from student groups that are on campus, such as RCDS, TRSS, things like that. Our fundraising manager is responsible for fundraising events, which can include the public or student population. These would include things such as our GoFundMe campaign, which launched back in the fall semester, as well as a bake sale that we ran in fall semester and one that we're actually running next week as well.
Varelli says RMTC relies on more than just monetary donations.
We also have a lot of students who like have just been donating things that they have like from home. So newspapers, everyone has newspapers. Like you can find newspapers off the street everywhere. So we've been collecting newspapers as much as we can, just bringing those in, collecting like if we have old boxes, old crates, things like that that we can use for the show. So just donations like that as well. In terms of like we have someone who's part of the marketing and they've been doing all these marketing campaigns just to like build awareness of the show.
Even with donations, it isn't always easy.
Definitely is a lot of work for myself, for our finance team, and for everyone that's involved with RMTC to seek out ways that we can bring in the funds necessary to support our performance. It takes a lot of dedication starting from the beginning of the summer, moving all the way through up until the week before.
But Varelli says all of this is worth it in the end.
It brings together so many different aspects. So if you're a student who's, for example, in a philosophy program, but you also love marketing on the side, come to the executive team. Come learn more about that. If you're a student who is is doing business right now, but you love to perform, come. It's the fact that there's so many different aspects of this show and so many different aspects that put the show together. And so there's something for everyone a part of it.
Almost, step out to drown.
Drown,
Newsies the Musical. It gives you something to believe in. March 13th to 16th at the Al Green Theater in Toronto.
And we're back. Question, Anthony. Do you use the school's two-factor authentication?
No, I have no idea.
Do you even know what two-factor authentication
is? No, what is two-factor authentication?
So I'm pretty sure it's when you kind of have to log in each time, and every time you log into your My Ryerson account, you have like an app or something where they send you a code, and the code's different every time. So only you know that code, and you have to enter it in every time you log in.
And they send you a code via text message or
email. And I think there's also like an app, or you can get some sort of key. But anyway, yeah, I actually don't even use it for my Ryerson account.
Yeah, I don't have that either. I think that's really annoying having to receive a code every time you have to log in, because God knows how many times I log in throughout the day.
Yeah.
To the Ryerson.
Yeah, well, now, so as of now, it's mandatory for all staff at Ryerson, but they're actually going to make it mandatory this August that it's mandatory for new students coming in.
For the whole year?
Yeah, for ongoing. So if you're a new student, you're going to have to use the two-factor authentication.
Oh, wow. Thank God. I do not want to have to deal with that.
But I feel like sometimes it's a good thing. Like, I'm sure there's lots of reasons why someone would want to hack into a MyRyerson account. And, yeah, like, I don't really want my personal information getting stolen or being used
for... Well, it's also an issue of, you know, being careful yourself and, you know, watch out for any obvious signs that you're being phished or you're being, I don't know, scammed into something or, you know, some viruses getting on you. Like, you know, you just click on a random thing that someone sends you and, you know, sometimes clueless people just click on those links without even thinking ahead. And the next thing you know, they'll have a virus.
That's true. But you know who does use it? Our very own Maggie McIntosh. She loves her two-factor authentication.
For a Community Corner segment, Maggie spoke to Brian Lesser. He's a chief information officer at Ryerson. He talked to her about two-factor authentication. Here's Maggie.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing today?
Not bad. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us here in the studio.
You're welcome.
So I wanted to talk a little bit about this new two-factor authentication that you guys are going to be implementing for new students next year. But I guess first off, can you tell me a little bit about your position at Ryerson and what it means to be the CIO?
Right. So chief information officer, although someone once told me it means career is over, CIO, but anyway, that's my attempt at a joke. But really the goal of the job is to make sure that all the IT services across the university, regardless of who's providing them, kind of meet the needs of the university and kind of align strategically. So cybersecurity is a big piece of that.
So is it fair to say that you are somewhat of the brains behind the school's firewalls against hackers?
No, that that comes from our IT security staff.
Okay.
And other people. And I, in terms of programming our firewalls, I probably have the IQ of a fence post. So, you know, that's, firewall rules are not something I would touch.
But so in terms of coming up with policy and
That's
standards.
more what I work on. Working with those people, trying to translate what they do to the university's needs, negotiate that space.
Okay, so can you speak to sort of the environment of cybersecurity threats and I guess the magnitude that Ryerson faces on a daily basis?
Yeah, so we're not different from many other institutions. For example, there's 1.7 million students at Canadian universities, so they're all a target. Faculty are target as well. Some people don't like their research and want to do nasty things. There were some Iranian hackers who were trying to get into library resources to get at databases that faculty have available to them by cracking faculty accounts. You know, so we're targets for all kinds of things, and it's constantly going on and constantly getting worse. And the tools that the attackers are using are getting better and better year over year. And the internet is growing, so it's a wider and wider field for cybercrime. So there's a lot of things driving it becoming a more challenging problem.
So what do people want to hack at Ryerson then?
So it depends on the attacker, but for example, email accounts are a great target. So if I can get hold of a lot of email accounts, I can send out spam for free. So it costs me nothing, and it's part of maybe my economic model to sell illegal drugs manufactured in Asia and so forth. But there's all kinds of reasons. Sometimes it's for fun. Sometimes it's because they didn't like something you said. Sometimes if you're an employee somewhere, maybe you're a student working part-time somewhere and they can get into your account. Maybe they can find your credentials and log into the HR system of that company and then change your banking information to their banking information. And so that's payroll diversion. If you used your account to sign up for Amazon or something, maybe they can get into your Amazon account and start buying stuff and having it delivered elsewhere. So there's all kinds of good economic reasons for attackers to get into your account and do things, and their tools are getting better and better. So once they have access to your account, they don't have to go and personally read everything there. They can just like do some searches and figure out, okay, here's some information I can use very quickly.
Okay, so if your accounts are all attached, let's say your MyRyerson account is attached to your bank for some reason,
right,
that is definitely a concern.
Yeah, or even if you've just used the same password somewhere else. So let's say you signed up for Yahoo using your Ryerson email address, and then Yahoo is breached, and now your password is the same at Ryerson, so now it shows up in a hacker's database. And so now anyone who gets to that database can say, well, I'll try that at Ryerson and see if I can get into your account. So last week we locked 22 student accounts because their passwords were out in publicly accessible databases, and this week we locked another 8 accounts for the same reason. So.
Okay, so obviously having a strong password is sort of an obvious option when it comes to protecting yourself online.
Right.
Now, let's talk a little bit about two-factor authentication.
Right.
So what exactly is this?
So it adds an extra step to the login process. So you do your username and password first, but that's not good enough protection. So then there's another step, and then you use an authenticator. It could be an app on your phone. It could be a U2F key that you plug into the USB port on your computer that adds an extra step where it's something you have that's validating it really is you, as opposed to some attacker in some other country who just has your username and password.
So I have one of these on my phone. It's a Google Authenticator, and basically it's an app, right? You pick a number. Is it always like that? It's sort of a secret code?
No, so there's different second factors for something you have, and it can be an app on the phone. Some of the apps work differently. You just it sends a signal to your phone. You press a button, so you don't have to transcribe a number. So there's a bunch of varieties. The U2F keys, you just put them in the USB slot and push a button. And that's probably the most secure. And, of course, people get text messages with those codes instead of having the app. And that's probably the least secure two-factor setup.
So it's sort of like a second layer of protection. All right. And so I know this has been mandatory for staff for a while now, right? Can you speak to how long?
So we tried to do this gradually. So it wasn't a nightmare for people, you know, everyone trying to figure it out at the same time. And so we started with people who would volunteer to do this, if you want to call them early adopters, went through the departments that handle the most sensitive information first, HR and finance, and CCS and so on. But we made it mandatory for all employees in August, I guess, of last year or this year. And then made it mandatory for, it was last year, August last year. And so then made it mandatory for email accounts, which was the last step in the process for employees in January of this year. And so then all new students in August of this year. And so it's a kind of gradual rollout.
Okay. And so how bulletproof actually is two-factor authentication?
Yeah, so nothing is bulletproof. You know, human beings are very inventive, and we invent systems, and they're never perfect, so nothing is bulletproof. But two-factor really raises the bar. So if there was one thing you could do to protect your accounts, using two-factor just changes things dramatically. It gets much harder for people to break into your account. And if you're doing two-factor with those U2F keys that I mentioned, it's much, much harder. So those can't be phished. So, for example, there are attacks against two-factor where they fake the whole login process, including the two-factor piece, and then they replay instantly that code so it works. So there are attacks like that work. That will not work with a U2F key. Google made all their 85,000 employees use U2F keys, and since they did that a year and a half or 2 years ago, they haven't detected a single account compromise. So it can be very good.
So that's the hope at Ryerson.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to get to the point where we're not locking student accounts. A student doesn't wake up and discover they can't submit an assignment or get on our wireless because, you know, we've had to lock their account or somebody else has hijacked their account and locked it on them. So.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming in, Brian. Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
I think it's just we know it'll be a support challenge for many people. It's something that's very unfamiliar to them. And, you know, we'll do our best at helping everybody through this.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Yes, two-factor authentication is going to be mandatory, but what do students actually think about this? Maggie and I spoke to Jan Jedrzyk, the president of Ryerson's Computer Science Course Union.
Well, maybe it's fear-mongering. I don't really think it's that super necessary. I mean, I've yet to hear any stories of students crying because their my.ryerson account got hacked. I don't think it's really necessary.
Although he says two-factor authentication isn't really necessary, he did say passwords allow for only one level of security. We asked Jan what he thinks students can do to ensure their accounts are safe.
You know, the simple stuff, you know, add symbols and things to your passwords. And a lot of people get confused. You know, for me, it's I use, you know, a certain prefix for my password, 5 or 6 characters. That's the same for everything. And then the last 4 characters are dependent on the account. It's really easy to remember, but it's really hard to guess. When it comes to use a phrase, right? And then like do stuff like replace the I's with exclamation points or the A's with at symbols, stuff like that. It's really simple and it goes a long way to keeping stuff more secure.
And that's it for another episode of VirusSonian this week.
If you have a question or comment about today's show, send us an email at sonian@ryerson.ca or reach out to us on social media at the Ryersonian.
Thanks for listening. We'll be back in the studio next week. Have a great weekend, Ryerson.